नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनि इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायं उदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति न इष्टिकि. Today we are continuing to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni, text number 37. Esha Atma Pato Avyakto Nashta Kalena Bhuyasa Tam Pravartayitum Deham इमं विधि मया वृतम् एष आत्मपतो व्यक्तो नष्टः कालेन भूयसा तं प्रवर्तयितुं देहम् इमं विधि मया वृतम् एष आत्मपतो व्यक्तो नष्टः कालेन भूयसा तं प्रवर्तयितुं देहम् इमं विद्धि मया वृतम्. वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन. एषः दिस आत्मपतः पाथ ऑफ सेल्फ रियलाइजेशन अव्यक्तः डिफिकल्ट टू बी नोन नष्टः लॉस्ट कालेन भूयसा इन द कोर्स ऑफ टाइम तम दिस प्रवर्तयितुं टू इंट्रोड्यूस अगेन देहम बॉडी इमं दिस विधि प्लीज नो मया बाय मी वृतम अज्यूम्ड. Translation and purport by the Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This path of self-realization, which is difficult to understand, has now been lost in the course of time. Please know that I have assumed this body of Kapila to introduce and explain this philosophy to human society again. Purport. It is not true that Sankhya philosophy is a new system of philosophy introduced by Kapila, as material philosophers introduce new kinds of mental speculative thought to supersede that of another philosopher. On the material platform, everyone, especially the mental speculator, tries to be more prominent than others. The field of activity of the speculators is the mind. There is no limit to the different ways in which one can agitate the mind. The mind can be unlimitedly agitated, and thus one can put forward an unlimited number of theories. Sankhya philosophy is not like that. It is not mental speculation. It is factual, but at the same time, at the time of Kapila, it was lost. In due course of time, a particular type of knowledge may be lost or may be covered for the time being. That is the nature of this material world. A similar statement was made by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Sa kala neha mahata yogo nashtaha. In course of time, the yoga system as stated in Bhagavad Gita was lost. It was coming in parampara in disciplic succession, but due to passage of time, it was lost. The time factor is so pressing that in the course of time, everything within this material world is spoiled or lost. The yoga system of Bhagavad Gita was lost before the meeting of Krishna and Arjuna. Therefore, Krishna again enunciated the same ancient yoga system to Arjuna, who could actually understand Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, Kapila also said that the system of Sankhya philosophy was not exactly being introduced by him. It was already current, but in course of time, it was mysteriously lost. And therefore, he appeared to reintroduce it. That is the purpose of the incarnation of Godhead. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Dharma means the real position of the living entity. When there is a discrepancy in the eternal occupation of the living entity, the Lord comes and introduces the real occupation of life. Any so-called religious system that is not in line of devotional service is called adharma samsthapana. When people forget their eternal relationship with God and engage in something other than devotional service, their engagement is called irreligious. How one can get out of the miserable condition of material life is stated in Sankhya philosophy, and the Lord Himself is explaining this sublime system. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये पाञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Today we see how Lord Kapila is very authoritatively saying the purpose why he has come. Generally when the hero is introduced, he always gives some punchlines. And when he says, I have come here for this, this is my role, this is what I will do, and I am so and so. And some of the reviewers have said, after reading Bhagavad Gita, it's like an entire empire, an emperor speaking to you. It has got a lot of authority. So similarly, we see how Lord Kapila, as soon as he starts speaking, he says, this is my purpose, this is what I've come here, and he's speaking very authoritatively. And we also see the effect of time, how that deteriorates the knowledge of the self. The knowledge is not actually lost, but the memory of the people is that is getting lost. And over a period of time, to fill the gaps, people introduce their own. And we also see in this purport how the mental speculators work. They agitate their mind and they come up with new theories. But in contrast to that, the Supreme Absolute Truth is never changed. When we keep Srimad Bhagavatam book or Bhagavad Gita, we don't say, okay, new updates have come from Vaikuntha, you need to upload it, so please press this button. Nothing like that happens. If this book is there, it's been there, and it will be like this, it's absolute truth. It's been in the past, present, it's also applicable, in the future also it will be applicable. Now, similar thing happened, and Prabhupada brings out the parallel of how Lord Krishna brings out a similar point in Bhagavad Gita, how the knowledge that he is going to speak in Bhagavad Gita was lost. It was there earlier. It was passed down to kings in disciplic succession. And again the same thing happened. The effect of time, that got spoiled. And he had to speak the Gita again to re-establish Dharma. So there the purpose of the descent of the Lord is mentioned by the Lord himself. Whenever there is a predominant release in irreligion and a decline in religious activities, I personally come to protect the religion, to re-establish Dharma, and also to give pleasure to the sadhus and to protect them. Now, here, what is being lost is the actual knowledge. So, towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada uses this word, adharma samsthapana. When dharma is lost, those who take opportunity of irreligion, they try to introduce new philosophies, or they try to come up with a lot of mental speculations, come up with a lot of theories, and those things become more prominent, then adharma becomes samsthapana, means that becomes established. So adharma becomes established as a truth. Now, how do we know what is real truth and what is unreal? And we also have different ways of acquiring knowledge. So what is the authoritative source to which we can turn to when there is some discrepancies? That's when we turn to Vedas. The word Veda itself means knowledge. Now, before we even approach the Vedas, one may question, like, why can't I use my own abilities and acquire knowledge or try to understand this world? What's wrong in it? There is a specific process, like where I can get input from different senses. I have an active mind and I can take all these inputs, process, then I can come up with different conclusions. Now, there is a flaw in that approach. Now, in my hometown, my home is actually situated in the main road. It's in Kanchipuram. So, obviously, we'll have a lot of processions happening where they will carry the deities in the road. And before the deities actually come, there used to be elephants. Elephants will come before the deities actually come. And the elephants usually have a bell tied. So before the elephants come, the sound of the bell used to come. So my home was arranged in such a way that the front portion of the home is exposed to the main road, and then towards the middle there's kitchen, and then the living room is somewhere towards the back. So my mother was cooking once in the kitchen and she could hear some bell ringing. Now, naturally, her assumption was that, okay, the lordships are going to come. She doesn't know who it is. So the elephants are coming now. So she's hearing multiple sounds of the bell. And now she started to call us, okay, everyone get ready. Now the lordships are coming. Let's go and take darshan. Because when we stand on the front side on the window, we can see the darshan. So she called all of us. And then we all came. And then we expecting to see. And then neither there was an elephant. Not there was a religious procession going on. What happened was, few people were selling son papri, the sweet. They also ring the same bell, two or three people, they were going in a line and they were also ringing the bell and they were selling the sweet and they were passing through the street. Now what she heard is a bell. So as soon as she heard the bell, she assumed that it's going to be the lordships who are coming, the elephants. So this is saying that the elephant will come later, but the sound will come in front. So this is Tamil saying like that. So she assumed that. So she got information from her senses. Now the ears got the information. And then she assumed that it's going to be the lordships who are going to come. The elephant position is coming first. And then, but one good aspect is at least she was able to remember the Lord by hearing the sound. But my point is, how that assumption is led to a false conclusion. It led to a false result. We all have our senses. They give information. They perceive information. But there are limitations to it. Our ears cannot hear more than a certain frequency. Our eyes have limitations in it. If there is a blockage, I can't see what is behind this wall. So with all these imperfect senses, I am trying to acquire knowledge. Then naturally, I also have the tendency to become illusioned. And due to all this, I commit mistakes. And despite all this, what do? I claim myself to be a big knowledgeable person, which is the cheating propensity we have. So, humans have these defects. So that's why pratyaksha pramana or direct sense perception may not always lead to the right conclusion. The second way of acquiring knowledge is discussed here by Prabhupada in this purport as to how people agitate their minds by speculating. Based on whatever I see, then now I'll start speculating. Maybe it is like this. Maybe it is like that. It should have been like this, but due to these reasons, it has turned out to be now like this. So, the language that is being used is always, Prabhupada picks up on this point. Oh, maybe. You said maybe, which means you're not sure. You say you claim to be a professor, but still you're doing research, which means you have not come to a proper conclusion. So you don't have a solid knowledge to which you can refer to. It is always keeping on changing. So there is no standard point. So that second way of acquiring knowledge through mental speculation, that also is improper. It cannot lead one to the absolute truth. And that is why we have so many philosophies, theories that are being brought out. The intention being that one person who brings up a theory, he wants to prove that I am better than the previous one. So this intention to lord over somebody and to prove that I am better than others, that is one of the key factors that when that is applied on Krishna, that is what brought us into this material world. Why should I be subservient to Krishna? So let me do something better, let me be better than Krishna. So that is why this entire material creation is there for us to try it out. Try your luck, see, go there and see what happens. Now, so that does not lead us to the point of distress, and then we come to the, okay, there must be something beyond this. So some of the theories that have come up, one of the theory is, that's there in the six philosophies, is the karma mimamsa, means the Lord has got laws of karma. I do good work, I get good results. I do bad work, I get bad results. And God is supposed to give me all the results. So He is also bound by karma. So now I don't have to worship God specifically. If I do my work properly, God will give me results. Then doesn't have to be any endeavor from my side to do devotional work. So a lot of them are in that attitude where work is worship. I do good, I don't break the laws, I follow the laws of God, Lord is meant to give me the results. I don't need to do any special worship. All these worship in the temple, the time spent there, you going doing these activities, they are all sentiment. We don't have to do it. So many times we come across these types of thought process. But the point that is being mentioned by the Lord is, who has created that field of activity for you? What is it that you are using to do your activity? Your body, your ability, your intelligence, your senses, everything is provided by the Lord. Even as a karmi, when you are consuming something, say for example you are running an office, so office needs electricity, office needs water, office needs so many other supplies. So do you not pay the bills for the electricity department or the water department? You do. So even if you are acting professionally, you are meant to pay your bills back. But you are consuming so much from nature and you are saying that I am doing my work, so I have to get results and I don't need to do special worship to the Lord. Now that does not even make sense professionally, because when you are doing work, you have to pay your bills as per the law. So similarly, when you are under the control of the laws of nature, you need to pay your debts back. So that is where the devotional activity, devotional aspect comes into picture. So in the third chapter of Gita, Krishna explains the whole sequence of how one has to perform yajna or sacrifice. He describes the whole cycle, where the grains come from, that comes from the rains, how do rains come from. So it all boils down to the point, even to live your life in this material world peacefully, you need to have some devotional aspect to it. Not that you consume everything and not give anything back, or not, it's like being ungrateful. Now, coming back to the point of different ways of acquiring knowledge, the third way of acquiring knowledge is to hear from an authority. As soon as you hear the word authority, in our men's PC we have a watch which just says that I don't obey authority. The watch has been lying there. Maybe it's lost and found. So as soon as we hear the word authority, it rings and a lot of negative feelings come about in the people. Why should I be subservient to somebody and accept them as the authority? And here in this case, you're telling about Vedas. Who knows whether it is correct or not? What's the proof that whatever is there in the Vedas is correct? It will work for me. Now, when we take our real life, say for example, if I want to travel, I book a flight from Melbourne to Chennai. Now, I contact an agent and then he books up a flight for me. Now, when I go into the airport, I have to follow so many rules and regulations. Immediately, the form of airport authority comes into picture. So they make you follow a set of guidelines. You cannot carry this, you can't carry this, there is so much of weight restriction. And what do? We dutifully follow all that without even questioning. And then the person who is actually driving the flight, the pilot, when he announces, so we accept him as the authority, and the entire journey we are under his protection. And whatever they say, we have to follow. And in that case, we don't question. We put faith in the airlines, we put faith on the pilot that he will make sure that my journey will be okay. Now, when the aspect of faith and authority is the same principle, when that is applied for you to travel out of this material world, to take you out of these material modes which are pulling you down, which are keeping you entangled, there has to be a person who is beyond these modes, who is beyond the defects. In Bhagavatam, we have this verse where it says the human body itself is a vessel and the spiritual master is the person who will guide you to travel this material portion and take you out of this. Now, because we are putting faith in so many aspects, why don't you try the knowledge that is coming from the Supreme Authority? Try it as an experiment. Many times it's said the proof of the pudding is in tasting it. Try it. This is not like a blind faith. Just like when you have a map, when you are taking the route, you have a map, and then when you traverse through the map by putting the initial faith that this will take me to the destination, you will see certain landmarks that are coming. So then you will know, okay, I am going the right path. Similarly, Vedas give a process. You as a person can apply that process and see results, and there will be transformation happening within your own self. They are the landmarks. So by that results, you put more faith, you follow the process more rigorously, then you get further results. Like that, you keep proceeding. And if you want to get some initial faith, there are very scientifically proven things like how cow dung as such has got medicinal values. It's been written in the Vedas. If you accept it directly, you can save a lot of experiment. But scientists are now proving that it has got a lot of antiseptic and other values in it. And there are also predictions in the Vedas that have come true. the appearance of great personalities have been predicted and they are also coming true. So to start off, you have those initial faith-giving points that you can look into and start the process. And that is how you start to see, instead of agitating your mind without coming to any conclusion, you can follow the process of taking the source of Vedas, taking the authority, then based on that, apply your intelligence. So that is how, when Krishna was saying that I spoke this knowledge to Sun God, Vivaswan, and over a period this got lost. Now Arjuna, being a dutiful disciple, he got the information and then he applied his knowledge and then intelligence and he asks a question. So later on in the 26th chapter, Lord Kapila himself will explain the different characteristics of intelligence. One of the characteristics of intelligence is being doubtful and asking questions. Arjuna did not blindly believe Krishna, okay, you spoke to Vivaswan, yes, I agree, but he had a doubt. He did not hide it away from Krishna and, oh, maybe Krishna is speaking something. He did not have some kind of negative thoughts about Krishna. How, come on, how can you speak Gita and you're now standing in front of me? That can't be true. He openly disclosed his mind. This is what I feel now. How could you, who are standing in front of me now, have spoken the same knowledge to Sun God earlier? Krishna explains. So it is good to have doubts and ask intelligent questions. Then the doubts will get clear. Then you have apprehensions and then you come to a right conclusion. Now, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, who can know more about Krishna than Krishna himself? So that is why, who can know more about Sankhya philosophy than Lord Kapila himself? So he himself is telling. So Krishna explains that, okay, you and I have come here in this world many, many times, but you have forgotten it, but I haven't. So that is how I spoke to this knowledge earlier to Sun God, and over a period of time, it was lost. The same thing as happened in this case of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy was not something that was invented or reintroduced by Lord Kapila. That's what Prabhupada brings about here. It was already there and now it has to be brought back into life because it was lost. Now, as His Grace Sukadeva Prabhu yesterday, he clearly explained all the elements of the 24 elements. Now, I was very curious, what did this atheistic Kapila do? And His Grace Burjan Prabhu, in his unveiling his lotus feet towards the end in the appendix, he has given the six philosophies, and one of them is Sankhya. And what this atheistic Kapila did is, he also acknowledges that there are 24 elements, but he could not find out the soul and the super soul aspects. That is beyond those 24 elements. That is beyond the dead matter. The original Sankhya philosophy is to analyze all those 24 elements and to prove that matter actually comes from spirit. Spirit is superior to matter, and superior to Jivatma is Paramatma and Bhagavan. To acquire that knowledge and for the Jivatma to reach Paramatma and to get to the stage of Bhagavan realization, the process is devotional service. So the elements are described, so the super soul is described, the soul is described, the process to reach, that's also clearly given. But the atheistic Kapila, he comes to the point of analyzing all the 24 elements, he could not come to the realization that there is some superior force which is acting on that. So I could not find it, so there is no soul, there is no God. So all that exists is the 24 elements. There is nothing beyond matter. So that is how the original philosophy got concocted, and that is being presented. And many times, even within the purports of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada a lot of times bring out who is real Kapila and who is the atheistic Kapila. And one of my friends who used to come to the temple, he used to ask me this question. Now, I like the translations given by Prabhupada, but sometimes I don't seem to like or I don't get along well with Prabhupada whenever he tries to hammer Mayavad philosophy or whenever he tries to put in his purport what is this atheistic Sankhya, what is this real Sankhya. Why should he tell all this? He should have just presented the knowledge, he should have just given the translation and given some purport and talked about that and then gone ahead. Why should he hammer different people using this as a medium to hammer others? But actually, when I explained him, I quoted the example of how in Tirupati temple, when you are actually in the line, when you are in the queue, you will hear a lot of announcements that are going on. A lot of those announcements, what they will say is, see, we have an authorized office, this is the address, this is the phone number. Please do not trust the unauthorized people who will try to present themselves as the representatives of the temple and they will cheat you. And this announcement will go on in different languages. Now one may think, I have come to a holy place, why should I hear all these noises? But the point is, even after having come to the right place, you may get sidetracked and go and not actually see the darshan of the Lord, but lose your money, waste your time. And what happens is, ultimately it leads to frustration and says that, okay, it is the Lord only who did this to me, so I won't come to this temple again. Now, what are these cheaters doing? They are taking away the faith from you. They are saying that, okay, I lost my money, I paid so much, I didn't even get darshan, I had so much of pain. Now, the authorities, what they have come, they have seen these unscrupulous people doing it. Even though it's a spiritual place, people have started to misuse it. So, okay, we have authorized office, this is the authorized office, approach it, don't approach people. And you will see that advertisement being displayed in the TVs, and many times it is told. Now, it takes a lot of lifetimes for a spirit soul to even turn towards spirituality. Bahunam janmana mante jnanavanman prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. Very, very rare people take up this process. They turn towards God. Even after having come so close to God, if somebody gives an atheistic philosophy or the philosophy of Mayavad, which will take them away from them, it is a great loss. So that is why Prabhupada is saying, this is correct, take this, this is wrong. In Ishopanishad it also, it is said that one should know knowledge and nescience side by side, so that you can survive in this material world. So that is how we understand the clear distinction. What is the correct source? Who is the authentic person? Where should I take knowledge from? And how should I get out of this entanglement of material world? So in the later chapters, just as Arjuna was asking Krishna and bringing out the information, so Krishna is like the cow and Arjuna is like a calf, he is milking. So the calf, when it comes near the cow, naturally the cow will start giving more milk. Arjuna asking a lot of questions and Krishna giving answers. Similarly, we will see how Mother Devahuti will start inquiring from Lord Kapila. And Lord Kapila will start explaining about how you got entangled. When towards the 26th chapter, the fundamental principles of material nature, there he will explain how these elements are created. The interesting point I read about that is, the mind actually is created in the mode of goodness. Oh, what a relief to hear that. Our mind is actually created in the mode of goodness. Now, towards in the purport, Prabhupada explains that when the mind is engaged in Krishna consciousness in the service of Aniruddha, who is the chief of the mind, then it is possible to become purified. In the purport, we see that how mind gets agitated. Now, the way the mind gets agitated is one of the ways is by taking inputs from the senses. Now, we have this hierarchy clearly described in the Bhagavad Gita itself, which is where, what is where. Now, why do I need to know this? Is because I need to use this body, which is like a vehicle. Yantra rudani maya. This body is like a yantra. I need to use it properly to attain my destination. Now, I know that I need to refer Vedas and I accept spiritual authority. I am getting instructions. Now, how do I follow? They basically tell the distinction between body and the soul. You are not the body, you are spirit soul. And you have like a three-dimensional existence where there is a gross body composed of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And that's a subtle body, mind, intelligence and false ego. And you as a spirit soul reside within the body. You are not the apartment, but you live in the apartment. In the when you fill in the some form where they ask your name, what do you put? You put your address, is it? No, you put your name. And then what's your address? I reside in such and such place. So, you reside in this body, but you are distinct from this body. And in the third chapter, actually, Krishna gives this hierarchy. What is superior to what? So, the sense objects and the senses. So, the senses are superior to the sense objects. The mind as such is superior to the senses, and superior to the mind is the intelligence, and above all this is the soul. Now, why does he explain this whole thing to Arjuna? Because Arjuna asks a very important question in third chapter, which is Karma Yoga. Krishna, you have explained all this. I know what is right, what is wrong. But I am being impelled by some force which makes me do wrong things even though I know what is correct, what is wrong. What is that actual force? Can you please explain? Because you have explained all this, Nishkam Karma Yoga, Sakam Karma Yoga, this entire Karma Kanda, all this, I understand all this. Even after understanding all this, I know what is right, what is wrong. What is it that's impelling me to do wrong? So Krishna explains that Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna, Samudbhava, Mahashano, Mahapapmo, Hridyena, Miha, Vairinam. It is lust alone, Arjuna, which is more born in the mode of passion. That is the worst enemy. So here, the authority of Krishna, he is telling where all lust is residing. He tells it resides in your mind, intelligence and the senses. Now, okay, now how do I go about controlling? What should be my starting point? Krishna tells the senses are more easier to control. At the same time, don't stop with sense control alone. The spirit soul as such has to be in contact with spiritual knowledge. That spiritual knowledge will guide the intelligence, which the material intelligence, which is born in the mode of passion, that intelligence, when it is guided by spiritual knowledge, that becomes spiritual. So, with that spiritual intelligence, one has to guide the mind. Mind, when as such, naturally it is born in the mode of goodness, so when it is engaged in devotional service, it becomes purified. The way of controlling the mind is not by suppressing or not to not by suppression or by too much indulgence in the thoughts and the desires that come through. That is not the actual way. So if your desires are not fulfilled, what happens is you get anger. That is one pathway. So then anger makes you fall down because anger leads to bewilderment of memory, and memory is bewildered, you fall down. So that is one pathway. Now, one may think, okay, then I can fulfill all my desires and I'll be happy. So Krishna explains that it's just like, it can never be satisfied. The senses are always burning, they burn like fire and they never get satisfied. So one pathway of not fulfilling desires, that leads to anger. But the other pathway of fulfilling desires, what that gives rise to is more desires. You are caught up in a cycle. So now I can't fulfill my desires because it is going to lead to my more desires. Now if I don't fulfill my desires, I'm going to get angry. Now what's the solution? So Krishna explains that These desires cannot be stopped, but they have to be spiritualized. In the purport to 3.6.21, Prabhupada clearly explains how the controlling of mind works. Since mind is a product of the mode of goodness, if it is fixed upon the Lord of the mind, Aniruddha, then the mind can be changed to Krishna consciousness. It is stated by Narottam Das Thakur that we always have desires. Desire has to be purified. In the beginning, this purification has to be carried out by the order of the spiritual master. This is how we understand the importance of spiritual master. They know our current condition situation. They engage us in different services so that we don't have to artificially deny those desires or unlimitedly enjoy those desires, but spiritualize them and engage them properly. In the beginning, this purification process has to be carried out by the order of the spiritual master, since the spiritual master knows how the disciple's desires can be transformed into Krishna consciousness. So this transformation of desire is the solution, not overindulgence or not negating them. Say that I don't have desires, I'll kill it. So now we understand how the mind itself can be purified and brought into control. Next we see how the intelligence, as far as intelligence is concerned, it is clearly stated here that it is a product of egoism in passion. By practice, one comes to the point of the mode of goodness, and by surrendering or fixing the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes a very great personality or Mahatma. So here is what we see, how the knowledge, this knowledge is not given anywhere else. Nobody tells you how to get out of this material world. A lot of time we get information about how to get more entangled in this material world, how my desires can be fulfilled more in a better way, which, as obviously we saw, it is going to sow yet another desire in your subconsciousness mind. Mind is so powerful that even in the absence of inputs from the sense objects, it can go back and refer to your previous impressions and it will bring that up in front of you. So it is so powerful. Now, the only way of purifying it is by taking the instructions from spiritual master, engaging it in the service, and they tell you what is your original nature, what is your actual dharma. We can understand our original position by asking us simple questions. Do we want to be happy or sad? Our natural position is to be happy. Such happiness, do you want it to last for 1 minute, 1 hour, 2 minutes or hours? No, we want to be happy forever. And we always seek knowledge. This is how our dharma, our original position, this is your original position, and naturally you always serve somebody. If you are not serving anybody, you will be serving your senses at least. So your original position is to be a servant. So why don't you serve the master of the senses through this process? So the process, so the the goal is given to you. The process is also given to you. And what is your relationship with that Supreme Personality of Godhead? That is also given. Now this is what takes you out of the miseries caused by your body and mind. When you know that you are beyond this body and mind, the miseries caused by mind, especially things like depression, lack of confidence, inferiority complex, all that will go away. Once a lady was attending this Journey of Self-Discovery session, and when she saw that, oh, you're not this body, and she was very fat, and she exclaimed, oh, that's great, I'm not this body, so I don't have to worry about how people comment about how I look. So that brings about immediate relief. So the misidentification is removed. That brings immediate relief. So that is one of the characteristics of pure devotional service also. When we engage in that, we don't have to agitate our mind, go through various things, speculate. The process is directly given. Put some initial faith in the process. Start at least to experiment it. You will get some verification, there are some set stages that you will go through, you check all that, and then you see results, then you put more faith, and then you follow the process. There's nothing to lose. So many lifetimes you have engaged in the senses or service of the senses. Why don't we engage one lifetime in the service of the master of senses? So that's how we see how the Sankhya philosophy is being reintroduced by the Lord for the purpose of claiming the lost souls in this material world to come back to Him. So, I think I pretty much covered most of the points. Yeah, one last point I wanted to mention is how when Lord Krishna appears, we should not consider Him as an ordinary person, because we may think that, okay, He has descended into this material world, so He also has to have like a body like us, but whereas He always says that I appear in my own internal potency. Similar principle applies to Lord Kapila as well. Lord Kapila also. Because He is sitting in front of Devahuti and Kardamamuni, doesn't mean that He has taken up a material body. He always says that He is appearing in His own spiritual body always. That never deteriorates, and there is no concept of karma for Krishna. He always appears in His spiritual body. For us, we have gross and subtle body, and there is a concept of karma, so based on that you get a new body. When Krishna takes up new forms, we can also think, okay, He has done some karma, that is why He is coming in the form of a tortoise. Or He has done another karma, so He is coming in the form of Varaha. Another karma, so He has to come in the form of a lion. And Lord Ram has done so much of impious things, so that's why He is crying and suffering. Not like that. Many times there is a misconception also. Lord Ram also suffered. See, the power of karma is so much that the Lord also suffered. No, it's not like that. There is no subtle body, there is no gross body for the Lord, and there is no concept of karma for the Lord. So He takes up various forms, and there is a specific purpose for all these forms. And He clearly explains that, and they are to bring pleasure to the devotees. And we also see how simultaneously, while bringing out the Sankhya philosophy, He also gives pleasure to His father. He makes sure that His father goes back to Godhead. Later on, He will explain the knowledge to Mother Devahuti. And by following that process, it's explained in the purports of Prabhupada that Mother Devahuti also reached Vaikuntha, a special Vaikuntha called Kapila Vaikuntha. So she reached that abode. So by following the process of devotional service, we will go back to the spiritual world, and we have evidences for that. So I'll stop here and ask if there are any comments, corrections, questions. So the point of how the old impressions come up in our mind. So the question is, how does it happen, or how do we come? So Prabhupada explains in one of his purport as to how there is a pond, it is very still, and there is no disturbances. There is no one throwing stone or anything happening. But still, there is something inside, there are some bubbles come up, and then you see there is a splash of impure water, even though the water on top seems to be very pure. So similarly, the mind as such on the top level can be seem very quiet, because the chanting process as such is so powerful that the initial restlessness of the mind and all will be brought down, but underneath there will always be some previous impressions that are there. Now, should I go about digging out all my bad things and then start to fixing it? No, it's not required. In one of the lectures, Prabhupada explains how In the rivers, there are a lot of waves that are going on. It will be very troublesome to control. But when it joins the ocean, the waves of the ocean will take over the river. Similarly, the material desires may be there so much, whether superficially it may seem quiet on top, but underneath there will be so many material desires. But when you fill yourself with lot of spiritual desires, lot of spiritual goals, things that you want to achieve, things that you want to do in devotional service, when they start to go into your impressions, these bad things will slowly, because there's no space. So you always have to have spiritual desires that are going to come up, and the material desires will slowly go away. So you don't contemplate on them first things when they come out. You don't contemplate on them. It comes, it will go through. So you don't put too much mental energy on thinking about it. Yes, I had a bad past. Okay, I agree. We should actually feel humbled by those. Yes, I was so bad in the past. I accept. I agree. Now I must practice my devotional service more rigorously, more strongly. So in that way what happens is you have a clear path. Now what can I do? We have a lot of activities within devotional service. Hearing, chanting, engaging in practical devotional service, kirtanam, serving. So for me, according to my, what can I do next? So if you keep filling those, say for example, I want to learn mridanga, I want to play kartals, I want to sing in the kirtan, I want to learn Bhagavad Gita, I want to memorize slokas. When this to-do list is keeping on increasing, spiritual things, naturally those sublime things which are there at the bottom of your subconsciousness, they go away. I want to see the Lord, I want to dress them. So seeing the Lord daily, it creates a strong impression on you. So when they go inside the subconsciousness, that's how it clears. And there are prayers to Lord Narasimhadev, is there in the 5th canto, 5:18:8. You can recite those verses where Lord Prahlad Maharaj prays to the Lord to bring out those ignorance and take it out. And there's also another prayer. How when Lord Narasimhadev, he asks Prahlad Maharaj to ask for any benediction, he says, now, my dear Lord, if at all you want to give me any benedictions, take away all the material desires from the core of my heart. Yati dasyasi me kama varam stvam varadashrapa kama nam hridyasam roham bhavatastu vrine varam. I don't know the verse number of this. But yeah, there's one prayer where Prahlad Maharaj offers prayers as a resident of Jambudvipa. That's in 5:18:8. And even 5:18:9 also, it is good to overcome envy. So that prayer will say, let all envious persons be pacified. And in that state, let us all practice bhakti yoga, in which we will start thinking about the welfare of each other. When we start thinking about the welfare of each other, then this lower feelings will go away. So he will start praying like this. Any other questions? Kapila's teaching is atheist. So it's an atheistic Kapila, and he taught Sankhya philosophy without soul and super soul. There is no devotional aspect to it. There was only material elements and that's it. You are matter. So that was the conclusion. So it's not that Kapila's philosophy is atheistic. There was an atheistic Kapila who used this Sankhya, actually misused the Sankhya philosophy and brought about his own thing. So now what's your question?
So is there two Kapilas listed?
Yeah, so one authentic Kapila is listed in Srimad Bhagavatam as an incarnation. So even in the first canto, when the list of incarnations are there, you can see. And here we can see, just as Vishnu promised to Kardama, he appeared in the womb of Mother Devamuti and took birth, and that is original Lord Kapila. So incarnations have also always have to be checked with the Shastras. So that is also one way of making sure we are having the right faith. So there is Guru, there is Sadhu, then there is Shastra. Just like there is a tripod here, it stands in three legs so that it is stable. If it is just one leg, or it is just two leg, it will be like not full support. So that's why Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So anything that you want to come to a right conclusion, you cross check all these three you come to a right conclusion. So there is atheistic Kapila, who I heard from Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj's lecture that he was a king. Later he renounced his Kshatriya position and tried to become a sadhu, and he came up with this philosophy. I don't know much details, but the thing that I read is he eliminated the, or he did not consider the soul, super soul. He just gave the 24 elements, that's it. So we should be clear who is Lord Kapila and who is imposter Kapila. Is that clear? Hare Krishna. Yes, ma'am. Is there a difference between jnanis and those who study metaphysics? I don't know exactly, but jnanis go through this mental speculation of not this, not this, not this. So they do sit and analyze. But are jnanis exclusively doing study of metaphysics? I do not know. But there is a, in the six philosophical philosophies of Saddarshana, there's one of them which talks about this metaphysics, maybe Jaimini or somebody. That philosophy is also there, where they analyze all these elements and metaphysically they come to the conclusion that yeah, atoms are also eternal, so the soul and super soul are also eternal, but they don't acknowledge the fact that the super soul is playing a very prominent role in creation. They are just saying it's all a bunch of atoms and chemicals, they all came about like that. They don't acknowledge, although they know that their soul is also eternal, super soul is also eternal, they accept up to that, but they don't accept the role of super soul or Bhagavan in creation aspect. But are they truly jnanis? I personally don't know. They could be. Not sure. Anyone else want to answer that question? Yes,
I remember reading Bhagavad Gita introduction.
Yeah.
One of the very first chapters on when Ashok Prabhupada was mentioning that analytical study of, saying that analytic, there's no difference between analytical study and I think even Bhakti Yoga. There was, I can't quote this verse, but maybe someone remembers to read something.
Yeah, so the analytical study, actually in 13th chapter also, that analytical study is given. And I think Prabhu was quoting from that yesterday also, all that. What that includes is the controller of both, matter, spirit, and the controller of both, nature, enjoyer, and the consciousness. So that is complete. When that analytical study excludes soul, super soul, and the role of super soul in creation, that's when it becomes atheistic. When I conclude that everything is matter and there is nothing beyond matter, such analytical study is not recommended. Actually, in 14th chapter, in the beginning, Prabhupada encourages philosophical speculation based on the truth that is already given. So if you have Vedas as a basis, or Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam as a basis, so then you start reading it from different angles of view, that is encouraged. Such analytical study is encouraged because you're trying to understand the truth from various angles. Whereas mental speculation is, I don't have any basis and I'm just theorizing my own things. So, that will not lead you to devotion. So, in the purport you read that, is it? I'm not able to open that. 5.5. Okay. So, yes.
I've been asked by the question.
Okay.
So just correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And then message me was
online.
First question. Sankhya philosophy said before as it was just the time of the starting world. So, I probably didn't ask, is this your question? who initiated Sankhya philosophy, then replied, who was it told before as Devahuti is the starting of human life on earth? Who forgot Sankhya philosophy? If that means.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So who is Lord Kapila trying to teach to? Who had forgotten the Sankhya philosophy? By the information that's given in Bhagavatam, we see and Lord himself saying that I have assumed the form and due to course of time it is lost, even though I also thought about this point, because only in Kali Yuga we have memory is very low, our lifespan is also low, so we can't remember. But it is very prominent that in Kali Yuga the time factor is so prominent that it takes away. But even in Satya Yugas, other Yugas, time still has its effects of taking away the knowledge. And that is how the Lord Himself is saying that it is lost now. To understand the question better, now they are now in the beginning of creation. Now how is it that it is already lost? Now we are just starting point. Now we understand that the cycle, the creation is just like a cycle and it goes through like Satya, Treta, Dwapara, Yuga, Kali, and then again it starts as a cycle. So in that sense, I would say that the information that was there already is lost, now he is trying to re-establish. So the effect of time is there even in other Yugas. So the knowledge is lost due to the effect of time. That's by the word of the Lord, Nashta Kalena Bhuyasa. So we take the words of the Lord as authoritative, and so we assume that it was lost, now he's trying to reintroduce it. Who was the audience? I don't know. It's probably it was for the sages. Another way of understanding is, each time when the creation happens, like every sage has to introduce those philosophies again. So Lord Kapila being the authority of Sankhya philosophy, he has to speak again. So again, creation beginning he speaks, then towards the end it disappears, so then again beginning of next creation he'll speak again. Anybody wants to correct? Or?
This is
cyclic.
Because now even though it's described as the beginning of the creation, it is not the beginning. It's the beginning of the cult, the beginning of the day, the beginning of the year. So it starts from there. So
cyclic. Yeah, because every time the sages also created, we see that in the creation, Kardama is created by Brahma in the mode of goodness, and there are a few others. So Durvasa So when they are created again, they will introduce again. So Kapila is born, now he will speak this philosophy again. Makes sense, yeah. No, Kapila's philosophy is Bhakti Yoga, because the first chapter itself is importance of devotional service, and the verses which Lord Kapila speaks, it talks about pure devotional service. Mahi Ananya Bhavena means exclusive devotional service unto me. Once you read, you will get a complete understanding. So I suggest that you can wait till the whole chapter is finished, because it starts with glories of devotional service. It's a valid point, because why should I study analytically all this and I know the Bhakti Yoga is superior, but you have to start from where you are. You are not so exalted that you can practice Bhakti Yoga directly. Even to do that, you need to engage your mind, your senses. How to engage them, that is clearly explained. It's all coming up now. Stay tuned. It's the glories of devotional service. On over time, we'll conclude here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.